We're on the air.
We're on the air.
We've got a full group of citizens advisory group members present. And then, did everybody get a chance to read the minutes? George, thanks for your comments.
They're pretty minor, but.
Look at I.
I can't hear you honestly. No, if George reviewed them, I'm comfortable.
No pressure.
Okay.
No objection to approve.
No objection. We'll adopt those without objection. And then tonight we've got Pam with us who's going to do a presentation. We've got a pretty informal group. We'll just kind of do questions as they come up, if that's okay by you.
Okay.
And maybe just to begin, I think one of the things that kind of fundamentally we just wanted to kind of begin to talk through is trying to understand some of the financial relationships between EMS and the district. And then in understanding and discussing some of those financial pieces, maybe an idea of some liability related, that's something I've been concerned about and interested in, is some of the liabilities that might be attached to the to EMS that would either follow EMS or would continue to be the responsibility of the healthcare district. But if you want to just kind of jump in anywhere.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what you wanted to hear from me, so do you all know what a hospital district is or what it's charged with, what the legal definition is? Would you like to know that part first? I printed off, and you can take these with you, what is a hospital district and some of the things that the RCW say, and from our commissioner's resource guide from the Association of Washington Public Hospital District, kind of get an overview of that. And then it also has some things about the different ways that hospital districts can raise money. We have our property tax revenues, which our hospital district is just that, from the property tax revenues, the M&O revenues, but there are other kinds of revenues hospital districts can levy. You can do a levy lift, you can do bonds, you can do a one-year special by a vote of the people to do construction, or there's many different types of things. So I printed off those options too as well, just to, if you wanted to learn a little bit more about the hospital districts and
that would be great.
Indeed.
Yeah, that would be very helpful.
Take those. Also printed our budget for the hospital district side. If you
want to
have that.
Yes. Okay. Pam, why don't you just handle that?
Yeah.
I mean, some of us probably know more than others about the hospital district, but it'd be good to get it in the hands of everybody.
Sure.
Here.
I got a pair of glasses, did it?
I got my progressive lenses on.
Progressing my card up.
Yeah.
Need to progress a little more.
A magnifying lens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also on our district website. If you go to SJCPHD.com.
What a gentleman. And look at that, the numbers are bigger. Tell them they didn't go up, they just got bigger.
Yeah, he's doing
it. I think we got this figure. It went up.
I can read this.
All of the documents for the district and EMS are on the district website. If you go on the website, they're divided up in the hospital district documents, in EMS documents, PSELF documents, so that if you are looking for something specific, there's you know, final budgets, amended budgets, there's resolutions from the meetings, there's the subsidy agreements from PSAF on the PSAF documents, and it's listed subsidy 1, 2, and 3, and those are the main subsidy documents that started PIMC, and those are good to look at, especially the first one, the largest one, because it'll tell you the structure of how the hospital was created and going from the Allen Medical Center to Peace Island Medical Center, and the complexity of that subsidy agreement, and really spelling out what we live by, for that. And that is something for the hospital district. The hospital district number one is at the top, and then there's two levies underneath that. There's levy one, which is the property tax levy that used to go to Inter-Ottawa Medical Center and the district that way. When the subsidy agreement came about, he saw it unopened, then that property tax levy funds that. So the subsidy agreement spelled out exactly how much money we were going to pay them every year. It also allowed for an increase. It spelled out exactly, how it might go up each year or down. It's tied to the hospital index on the UPI. So every year in January, actually didn't come out until March. I have to look at that and see if it went up, down, the percentage, and then I multiply that with a difference times that original payment to get what the current year's payment is going to be. So the subsidy agreement really, really is detailed and was worked out between the hospital district and Peace Island Medical Center. And that's something if EMS were to go to leave the hospital district and go under fire for the different ways y'all are talking about, it could be a number of different ways that it could go, but it would depend on that agreement that was made between fire and EMS and the district to spell out exactly the desires of each one. The hospital district is on the other side. There's that property tax levy revenue stream that goes strictly to San Juan Island EMS. So all of EMS's money comes from that property tax levy. The district doesn't, the other property tax, we don't get any money from that. They're two separate levies. So all of EMS gets from its property tax, gets from that levy, and then the money that they make from insurance and calls and things like that. So we're separated that way for revenues in the district. But EMS is still owned by the property, by the San Juan County Public Hospital District. So all of its assets and all of that is owned by the hospital district. So if you wanted to merge with fire, it would depend on the agreement that you would make with fire. You could take, they could want all of the assets, and then you could talk about that agreement, or maybe they only want the medical assets and the ambulance and all that kind of thing. And maybe they don't want the building or the property that the building is set. So you could divide out what each organization would want to split off.
Subject to the elected board's acceptance of those terms.
And the attorneys, it really boils down, the PIMC subsidy agreement, it took months. It took 9 to 10 months for the attorneys and everybody to get together and talk to finally get an agreement that that satisfied, you know, everyone. So it's important that you have the attorneys with that kind of knowledge of what you know, are wanting to accomplish to draw up the agreement.
I'd be curious to know what the limitations might be within the PIMC subsidy agreement that reference EMS. To what extent is it a part of that deal? And what limitations might there be on what you can do in that area?
Originally, the building, Peace Health owned that building. They built that also. But when EMS went out for the bond and that was received, they took that bond money and they paid Peace Health off. So there is no connection between the EMS for revenue for that building.
EMS took the bond out of the hospital district.
The hospital district took EMS.
Okay. Yeah, but it is in the name of the hospital district.
In the name of the hospital district, but Peace Health doesn't have any claim to it.
It is hospital district property.
It's hospital district property. EMS did that pretty quickly to get it underneath the district and EMS's control, where they didn't have to, you know, think about paying. In the subsidy agreement, I think if you would read the whole thing, there was a plan on when that, you know, that was going to be paid and what and everything like that. But the district and the EMS were able to do the bond and get it in the district's control and EMS sooner than what was laid out in the subsidy agreement. So it's totally under the hospital district.
But EMS revenues pay the bond?
Yes.
Yes.
And that's
every month. On the budget that Chief Martin presented to you, the bond payment, it's just under $10,000.
So the debt there's no debt service in your budget to the building.
No,
it's all into the EMS budget.
It's
okay.
It's in here.
Pam, in all honesty, on your budget, your cash in, cash out. Is there a residual left over from cash out on what you take in? In other words, is there any, do you build your cash reserves year to year? Is there an element that goes
yes,
there?
Yes, under on line 28, that's the RV.
That's your current reserves, but are you finding that you're building reserves, or are you kind of neutral in your reserves, or are you finding
we're building a little bit
are you?
Each year, except
this
possibly
year.
This year.
Yeah, because you showed them.
Because we brought Nathan on full time, and we had some additional.
So with Nathan coming on full time, I guess my bottom line question would be, is that any assets or any debt service to the EMS budget could really not be absorbed by the hospital district budget, at least as it currently stands, without going negative. Is that correct?
Some could, but no, not a great deal, because the subsidy payment that we have to make to Peace Health takes about 94% of our part of the levy.
Sure.
So 6% is left over to pay the rest of the district's expenses.
So to run your operation. So in theory, why any negotiation is almost going to have to be a clean wash on what their debt is to be able to be for the hospital district board to be able to probably, unless they raise the levy or, you know, or got some other earnings somewhere else.
Yes, correct, in that, except for right now, we're still in the middle of our feasibility period for selling the Inter-Island Medical Center. Today is August 29th, so at midnight tonight, the end of the 35-day feasibility period is up. We haven't heard anything from a potential buyer that they're pulling out. So the potential contract that was signed by the board after the feasibility period of 35 days, and they were hoping to do closing in 45 days, so that's just 10 more days. So if that sale does go through, then the $850,000 will be used to
apply to draw down on the debt for the building. Still, though, I've heard numbers bantered around. There still would be somewhere maybe around an $800,000 debt still out there.
Yeah, between 600 and 800.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Pam, if EMS were to shift under fire in any configuration, what would that do to the needs for the hospital district? Because now you have one less levy, one less... I mean, I know they're running their own budget, but would you still need the same staffing configuration if you're just doing the subsidy with the hospital, or could you potentially... No, I'm not suggesting that you get rid of Nathan or you cut your own hours, but is that something that's realistic as part of the duties?
We could, it's realistic that could happen, but we also, with not having EMS under our control, we could look at, as in the information that I gave you, hospital districts. You know, we have a really direct need for senior nursing care, and you know, we could concentrate on that problem. And we can do financing in for that area also. So we could do some of the things listed on the levies and different things and go out and tackle that bigger problem.
New revenue stream.
Yes,
right.
And so. Or there could be other areas of the public. You know, we could probably, you know, be asking the community, okay, now that we're not, you know, doing EMS, what would you like to see us work on? I know the senior nursing is one thing, a big for the community that wants, but there are other things too that, you know, under a hospital district we could do. It would be a big shift, yes, but it could be something that's very beneficial to our community.
From your experience, and not to put you on the spot, I know you're not speaking for your board, and this would be just from your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about the current state of EMS services, things that you've heard from residents, things that you've heard from providers? Do you have any thoughts about EMS service going forward? Are there better ways to provide services that you think would be more effective, either within the current operational situation or in another reconfiguration?
Well, as a superintendent, I kind of do the big overview. I'm at EMS building a lot. I go to a lot of their meetings, staff meetings. I go to most of their training meetings that they have. To Tuesdays out of the month, and they focus on patient care. I mean, they are very dedicated in their training, what they're doing, the calls. They really the EMTs that they have. We've had a downturn in the number of volunteers they have, but some of those volunteers that had left were EMTs that had been with the MS for 10 years or more, and they were high volume EMT responders, and they've gone on to PA school. There's a couple in PA school. There's one, you know, in that left to pursue medicine, and a doctor. Some got married, and they were both of them were high responders, and then they got married, and then they, you know, went off. So some of the downturn in the number of volunteers is just a attrition, you know, from that. But I have not seen any downturn of the dedication of either the paramedics or the EMTs in wanting to service the San Juan public best they can every time they go out. I can see the need possibly for having an EMT at the station, a full-time EMT to be at the station if the volunteer that doesn't numbers don't come up to get the rig out the door faster. But as a whole, as most of the time, I mean, it's the paramedics are there on scene and the rig is leaving the station. But if the staff, if the budget could withstand a hiring two full-time EMTs to be at the station, you know, during the day and during the night, that would assure that there would be someone there to get the ambulance and leave and meet the paramedic. Their response times for the paramedics being there and are very fast. They're well within the standards. It's just every once in a while the getting the rig out because the numbers of the EMTs are less, and people seem to be more busy these days. You know, and some of the EMTs have gotten married, so they, you know, they have a family now. They've had babies. So there's more competition for their time, so that also lessens the time for them to get to be on shift.
Is your perception of recruitment, though, is it a situation where there's not a perception that there's individuals out there that want to join the organization? I mean, if people have left, if they were high volume responders, are there not a backfill to fill those? Is there, the opportunity, and I appreciate that resources, you know, are a finite amount, especially in the environment such as it is. But is there not opportunity for new folks? Is there not opportunity for, and I don't even know what the fire department's recruitment is like for volunteers when you go for a rally of individuals and so forth. Is there just a limited group? Because it appears like you're starting to burden the budget more with paid individuals than, you know, what your volunteers. I just had a candid off conversation with a gentleman who I had asked to come over and do some quoting for me, and both he and his wife were with the EMS system for an extended period of time, and one of them has left, and the other one is still with EMS. And my sense was is that there were challenges, and that's why he left, as opposed to maybe him wanting to leave. So I guess, you know, a couple-fold question. Are there challenges going on in the environment that is producing the reduction of individuals? And is there an opportunity to bring more individuals in to be able to cover from your perception?
Well, I think as Brad would maybe say, that every time there's a new EMT class, since I've been with the superintendent of the hospital district, and I had my office at the EMS building from 2013 to the middle of last year, there are less people signing up to be, you know, for the EMT classes. So they are getting fewer EMTs coming out of each class. And if your number of people are dropping and you cannot fill all of your shifts that you used to fill because you had more EMTs, then EMS is still charged with serving the public and getting the care to them as fast as possible. And so if you don't have the number to fill the shift, then that's why looking at, you know, paid position.
Sure. No, that I understand.
But then you there, but you also are like, okay, that cost, and you have to, you know, put that in your budget, and when your budget is already tight, then yeah, it's a you know, a dilemma.
So, Pam, with that, excuse me, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, well, you're speaking about the morale issue, positive morale within the facility. How would you characterize that? Because that has to do with folks who want to come to a meeting and, you know, this is something I want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. It's positive, it's, you know, how would you characterize morale?
Well, when I'm there and when I'm in, the morale seems good. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I'm not there all the time, so I'm not there after, you know, dinner time and in the middle of the night and eating with the crew as they come back in. The morale does, I mean, I've seen it suffer when there's been intense things going on in the public eye, like when we went through with, you know, getting the levy passed and just the week after week of the scrutiny and letters in the paper and, you know, of some of them that seemed to the volunteers they were talking about, you know, their performance, but their performance has never wavered. They give excellent service and have their save rates and heart and things to compare throughout the whole United States. So their performance for medical capabilities and serving our community, and I don't know how many pies and boxes of cookies and, you know, all kinds of things that come in the door after calls, because they really value the service they got and the continued service of the same people coming to their door when they have a problem, because they know them and they feel that makes them feel more comfortable also. But morale, yes, it does. I think in any organization, it goes up and down with, you know, what is going on. And everywhere, I think all of you have experienced, and if you have a tighter budget, I think it's harder to keep your people in your
I guess something I've heard from folks within the system and folks in Off Island involved with the systems. It's a close-knit community, always has been. But if you want to hire a new paramedic, a new EMT, it doesn't go out to public. It kind of stays in-house. That's perception I've heard from several people and been recognized. I don't know if that has an effect on, you know, well, morale, getting people from different walks, you know, the best paramedic you can get, the best EMT, putting out public notice. It is a taxing district.
Right, but they haven't had a need to hire a paramedic since I've been there.
Yeah, he won the past.
So I don't know about before I was there, but there hasn't been a paramedic position.
Not to put you on the spot, but since you're here,